Hi, welcome to another of our Coffee Time Chats. Today we're joined by Apo Demirtas, founder and CEO at Intelligent Hospitality, the company behind Hotel IQ Decision Cloud. In this discussion, we hear why Apo feels that the way hotels forecast top-line revenues is wrong and woefully outdated. We touch on a number of topics, including the flaws in the current way of forecasting. Is forward-looking data only a value at a macro corporate level? Predictions rather than forecasts and the zero-based philosophy? And finally, why is there resistance to change? Really hope you enjoy the conversation. Let's get started.
Hi, Apo. Welcome to one of our Coffee Time Chats. It's the afternoon here, so I've actually got tea rather than coffee. But
it's the morning here. I got my coffee here.
Perfect. How are you?
I can't see what you have there, but here's the proof.
Mine's definitely tea. How are things for you? You well?
Very well. Thank you for asking. How about you?
Yeah, very good indeed. Very good indeed. Thank you. So we've got a topic today, which is really, I mean, we use these coffee time chats to kind of just talk about some issues or some frustrations or some, goodness me, are they really still doing this? And I think this kind of topic sits into the last category there, which is, are they really still forecasting in this particular way? And that's what we want to touch on today. Get your insights, get your views. So we'll move into that in a moment. But before we do, could you just give us a brief introduction, who Apo is, Hotel IQ Decision Cloud, what they are all about?
Sure. Thanks, Trevor. Yes, I am the founder and CEO of Intelligent Hospitality. Hotel IQ Decision Cloud is our cloud-based software. It's data management analytics planning and collaboration software for commercial folks in hotel business.
And your background, as well as the founder, before you founded Hotel IQ, can you give us a brief overview? Because you've got a strong hospitality background as well.
Yes, I do. I have been in hotel business for more than 30 years. Mm-hmm. I started my career as a page boy at age 16, which is when I was attending a hotel management vocational high school. And then I went through bachelor's and graduate programs, master's degree program in hotel business, and worked in the industry all my life. But I also did my PhD in applied economics. Mm-hmm. The reason for that was because I always felt the absence of scientific decision making in hotel business.
Yep.
You know, we were raised as quote unquote artists in our own domain. But when it came to running business based on scientific facts and insights, I thought we were really feeble as hoteliers. Mm-hmm. So for that reason, I went ahead and did my PhD in applied economics. Who knows? I might be the only one. I might be the only hotelier with a PhD in applied economics. But anyway, and that has served us well, obviously, and served me well personally. And
What brands? What were some of the brand hotel groups that you worked with?
So my first company following the PhD doctor program that I did was Hilton. Mm-hmm. I worked for Hilton Hotels Corporation. This is not Hilton Worldwide, Hilton Hotels Corp here in North America. Mm-hmm. And then I worked for Intercontinental Hotels Group. And later I joined Jumeirah group in Dubai as their chief sales and marketing officer. Just about 10 years ago, I left Jumeirah to start our company to build Hotel IQ. And 10 years later, it's been exactly 10 years actually, and here we are.
As they say, the rest is history. And it was important that I wanted to kind of tease that out, particularly the PhD element, because we're going to be coming at things from, I know one of the topics we're going to touch on is within that economics field. But what I also wanted to do, it was really important for me that anybody listening or watching this understands that this isn't somebody just talking from a technology perspective, telling hoteliers to change, but also has been on that side where they've been the hotelier, where they have been doing exactly what we're going to talk about. So there is a realization that, please stop doing this. There is another way of doing it. And I'm talking from a position of knowledge, having gone through it, not just talking to you and saying, you know, change because it suits my agenda. So that's why I just wanted to position exactly where you're coming from. So it's
that's exactly right, Trevor. I appreciate that. There are a ton of those that are out there that try to do what you were suggesting, but you're not one of them. We're hoteliers, and at the same time, we have a strong business science background. Mm-hmm. Whatever we say that hoteliers should do, we did it ourselves in the field. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So yes.
Okay, then let's kick it off. Let's look at what a vast majority of hoteliers are doing when it comes to forecasting, budgeting. And we're talking here not from the cost side of things, we're talking here from a sales, from the sales forecasting, sales
top
budgeting.
Line.
Yeah, top line budgeting. Mm-hmm. So your proposition is that the way that it's done at the moment has numerous flaws, is outdated, and there are significant advantages to approaching it in a different way. But let's first of all unpick, and again, leaning into your experience, you've been on this side of the fence as well. Let's first of all unpick what it is about. What do you see? How do people budget forecast at the moment? And then what do you see as the flaws in that particular process?
Sure. The way hotels forecast today, or budget, really. Mm-hmm. The name is irrelevant. It's the same process they go through. Let's just define what budget is and what forecast is first. Budget is an exercise they go through. Budgeting is an exercise they go through before the upcoming year. Usually it starts, hotels start in August, mm-hmm. or September, mainly in August, start preparing their forecast for the following year, and that exercise literally takes 3 or 4 months. and the forecast is when the hotels enter that new year, they start revising their budget, and they call that revision their mm-hmm. forecast, and they keep forecasting from there on. So that's what it is, right? So that we have the definition out of the way. Now, Microsoft introduced Excel in 1985, and the hotels have been forecasting exactly the same way since 1985, using very rudimentary methods and a manual tool like Excel, right? And with not much science, really. It's been very traditional for hotel companies to go and take whatever they did last year, in the previous year, and apply an X percentage, either increase or decrease. For the most part, it's an increase because they usually don't know that something bad is going to happen, right?
Sure.
And everybody's optimistic. And there's an expectation that comes from an ownership group or perhaps the hotel management company, whatever that might be, that they actually, again, increase their top line, RevPAR, ADR, occupancy, whatever that might be, based on a certain expectation. And that expectation does not usually have much of a science.
Right, yeah.
And it's a percentage increase.
I was going to say, what's the logic behind the percentage that they choose?
Not much. If a hotel company wants to achieve a certain goal, they have a goal for themselves. And that goal might be driven by many factors that are usually not related to the science itself, but wish list, let's just call it that.
Yeah.
And then they go to the hotels, the units, and tell the units to increase, to apply X percentage on their previous year performance. Mm-hmm. And that's really that.
They need to see growth. So they might say, okay, if I'm sitting in a hotel, if I'm the GM of the hotel, right, we need to see an 8% uplift on last year in terms of growth.
That's how it is actually today. And there is really no science to it. The closest science there is they look at the amount of business they have on the books for that time frame. As of right now, they go, okay, well, that's great, but then we'll probably do X amount more and apply, add that on top of it, and that's your forecast or budget.
So coming back to your point, if I've got this Excel spreadsheet in front of me, I'm back in September, October time looking at, I'm budgeting for next year. So let's say we're talking January to December. Right. I can see that currently on the books, I can see what I have in January, February, March, and maybe a little bit further out from that. But that's probably the window I'm initially going to be focusing on because it's already there. And then I'm going to look at it and say, okay, well, we need an 8% increase. So I just put an 8% multiplier on top of whatever numbers may be sitting in each month at the moment. And then I go back and start thinking, all right, so if I've got January, February, March, I've now got to start looking at April, May, June. I may have very little business on the books. So what am I doing? Looking back at what I did April, May, June this year. I mean, maybe this year is not a good example with the pandemic, but that's the numbers we're working with, isn't it?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. I mean, if you don't have anything on the books, then what you do is you look at what you did in the past and you apply X percentage on top of it. That's how they do forecasts today. There's really not much science to it. And obviously a company like ours, we come in and we change that.
There's obviously, because you've been working on developing solutions over the last 10 years to do things differently, there's obviously an implication of forecasting, budgeting in that, let's call it legacy rather than old-fashioned way of doing. What are the risk is maybe too strong a word, but what are the implications of taking an approach using Excel and just rolling up 8% if that's the growth I need? I mean, it's simple, it's quick,
but then it's inaccurate, right? To answer that question, you first need to answer this question. What's the purpose of forecast or budget? Why do we do it, right? Mm-hmm. Why do we work on budget and then start revising it from there, which we call forecast? Companies do that because they want to put guidance out there, right? That's number one. Number two, for planning purposes, if you know with a really strong degree of certainty as to what you're going to do in the future, then you can start planning now for that time frame. Now, when you use manual tools like Excel and rudimentary methodologies, then your forecast or budget is way off.
Right.
And therefore, the decision that you're going to make, whether it's a planning decision or a guidance that you give out, will be wrong, really. If you think about it, a hotel organization is comprised of so many hotels. So you have these budgets or forecasts at unit levels and you aggregate them. Mm-hmm. That becomes a company budget and forecast. And if you're a public company, you're giving guidance to the market, right? To ownership, which are the shareholders. That might not be as accurate, right? And so that's not a good thing for an organization that, if you come way off your forecast, if the actuals are way off your forecast, that decreases confidence in your organization, and that'll have a long-term financial impact. That's number one. And number two, again, resource planning. If you're way off your, and when I say way off, I don't necessarily mean, people usually take that as, oh, okay, I came under. Being off is plus or minus. So you could be off in a plus or minus fashion, right? So you give a guidance out, but then you come out 10% higher. That's not good either.
Either way, it looks like you don't know what's going on with your business.
Exactly. You don't know your stuff is what it means. That's the other thing that I want to mention. In hotel business, it's very traditional to come out and pound your chest and say, I beat my forecast by 15%. I came over 15%. I made more, 15% more than my forecast or budget. That's not something you should be proud of. At all.
Well, but surely beating your forecast is great, isn't it?
No, it's not. I mean, it is. Don't get me wrong. Financially, obviously, it's great. It's just not great on you because you don't know your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that in turn will have confidence issues, right? And again, for planning purposes, if you don't necessarily plan your resources appropriately. If your actual is coming out of coming about 15-20% higher than your forecast, but in any case, those are the challenges, really.
And if we're looking at, I mean, a lot has changed in the last couple of years through obviously everyone knows with the pandemic, and this will alter. So back to your point about hotel groups with multiple properties, multiple different regions, multiple different locations, multiple different impacts on pandemic restrictions and lockdowns. So if I'm looking at my forecast and applying the process that you were talking about, and I'm taking my numbers from previously and adding a multiplier, well, going forward, my market might have changed slightly or altered or morphed to a degree. I mean, how much forecasting through that forecasting process, budgeting process, is actually looking into the market insights as well to give you a stronger guide for the direction you're planning?
I mean, the market insight it comes in so many different shapes and forms, right? Mm-hmm. People will tend to get lost in this, what we call market insight. Any kind of market insight out into the future, and there are even tools like that, right? In fact, there's a tool even called Market Insight by OTA Insight.
Mm-hmm.
But what does that really mean, right? So there are a whole bunch of data points, whether it's airline data, weather data, and supply data. When it comes to the unit level to a hotel level, they don't really help much, if any. Here's why: they're really helpful when it comes to macro views, mm-hmm. right? If I'm a hotel company and I'm looking at it from a macro standpoint, because I'm going to make macro decisions, right? Long-term strategic decisions, then yes, they are helpful. But at a unit level, at a hotel level, not much. Take OTA Insights Market Insight as an example. So they have tons of data, good data, on airlines and stuff. So you can see airline loads and service to your destination. Let's just say that you're in London, mm-hmm. and you look at the airline load factors and so on. But what does that really mean? If you are a three-star hotel and you have all the airline passenger data, but do you know what percent of them are actually coming to London because they live in London?
Mm-hmm.
What percent of them are coming to London because they want to visit family and stay with family? Mm-hmm. 1%. What percent of them are going to stay in shared economy, Airbnb?
Mm-hmm.
And those that are going to stay in hotels, do you know what percent are going to be three-star customers?
Yep.
Four-star customers, four-star hotel customers, three-star hotel customers, five-star? You don't know these things.
Yeah.
So just looking at that kind of a macro information and saying, okay, well, here is my airline data, passenger data. And but if you really don't know, and you're not going to know this anyway, nobody knows the breakdown the way I just I explained it, right? You don't know what percent is going to come to your three is going to come to the three star category of the hotel. Yeah. That is not helpful.
Not as a hotel, you can't do anything with it, can you?
No. Yeah, you have some sense as to what's going to happen in the general marketplace.
Yeah, you know there could be demand that's there that you may be able to take advantage of, but how much of that directly relates to you if you're a three-star is a bit of a finger in the air and see which way the wind's blowing.
Correct. And if you think about it, all that, the impact of all that macro data is already in your numbers. Here's how. Those airline factors, load factors, those are airline passengers that are booked to fly into London, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then they have already made their hotel reservations.
Yeah.
And if they actually booked you, it's in your booking pace numbers, mm-hmm. right? Forward-looking booking pace numbers.
Yep.
So the impact,
so you've already captured the demand that's flying in. Yeah.
Yeah. So what you need to measure is the speed at which your future business on the books changes and the trend line. You need mm-hmm. to monitor that trend line and factor it and use that factor to run your assumptions. Now, we have automated forecasting process. We always advocate zero-based forecasting, not necessarily taking what you did in the past and either applying a percentage on top or maybe decrease, whatever that might be. We don't do that. That's not called zero-based forecasting. Zero-based forecasting is no matter how long you've been around, you start from scratch. You start as if you're opening your hotel brand new. And do zero.
Okay, so let's just pause that minute. So zero-based forecasting. So this is, you're looking at it as if you have a blank sheet of paper.
Yes.
My hotel is going to open on Monday. I've had no business, and I'm now going to forecast from there. Yeah?
Correct.
So how does that work then? If I haven't got any data, I haven't, how am I starting to pull that together?
Right. So zero-based forecasting is, for hotels that have been around, what it means to them is you don't take a previous year's, it could be last year, it could be the year before, any previous year is a baseline mm-hmm. and apply a percentage.
Yeah.
You're
saying scrap that.
Exactly. Zero-based forecasting is taking that all out, all the while understanding the patterns, right? The historical patterns. You don't necessarily take a historical year and apply a percentage, but you do need to understand the patterns. And I'll explain it in a minute. And then you need to measure the propensity of how much business that you'll be able to bring into your property. And that is actually where the trick part is. So when you're looking at forecasting and budgeting, you need to look at what's known first, right? So what do we know? What we know for a fact is what we have on the books. We know that. Mm-hmm. And what we also know is historical patterns, meaning here I am, I'm in August, and let's just call it August 2021, and we are going to budget for 2022. So in August, you know how much business you have on the books for 2022. Mm-hmm. And what you don't know is how much business that you will pick up between August 2021 and December 2022 for the year 2022. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And you don't know that. And that's the piece, the propensity that is you need to measure and calculate. And to do that, you need to take a look at historical patterns. And how much business did you pick up between August 2019 and December 2020, August 2020 and December 2021 for 2021?
Yeah.
You need to take a look at the way your patterns, basically, the amount of business that you picked in similar time frames in the past, and put that aside. So that's also a known factor, right? But then you need to understand the speed at which your business is changing out into the future. Mm-hmm. And we measure that by, we call that pace progression. You need to look at the progression, meaning the speed at which business changes over time. So you need to take these data points and really come up with, I don't want to reveal the secret sauce that we use.
No, of course.
Within our company, we have what we call, it's algorithms that we wrote ourselves. So we look at the recency of data. We look at historical patterns, mm-hmm. but the recency of data is weighted a hell of a lot more than historical patterns. And then we couple that with AI and machine learning technology. So those are time series models, and we push them through AI and machine learning technology to forecast and budget out. And the words forecast and budget are, they're just semantics, really. It's predictions.
So they become a lot more interweaved in the way that you're saying, because it's a prediction rather than a constantly adjusting forecast or a revision of a budget or forecast.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. I mean, and prediction is life. It's living and breathing methodology. So you're in the system constantly predicts. As new data comes in, as the data is refreshed, which is nonstop, then predictions really change. Mm-hmm. Think of it this way. I give this example quite often. I think I told you this before. Google Maps.
Yep.
Right. So you're at home and you're going to the center of London, and you put your location in, destination, and it tells you that you'll get there in an hour and a half, and then you start driving. Suddenly, it is 1 hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, something's happened.
right, because new data came in.
Yeah.
Right, or 1 hour and 20 minutes. Whatever that might be. So for that reason, it's really important to take a look at those predictions all the time, yeah. Right? And that, as a result, completely takes away the reason why people do create forecasts and budget. Why do we need forecasts and budget anymore? Why not constantly monitor your predictions for whatever time frame that is? It could be next month. It could be the next year, right? And
so how long does this roll out then? When you're, I mean, are you advocating then that it's that the approach that hoteliers should be taking is this zero-based forecasting and doing predictions rather than forecasting? So, and that could predict out as long as you want it to predict out. So in terms of, because I'm putting myself in the shoes of a hotelier, I'm being asked to do a forecast or a budget. Or, I've done my budget, I'm now doing a forecast, but I'm saying, well, hold on a minute, I want to do a different way of doing this. So I could get a 12-month prediction for a snapshot that I've got to send up to tick the box and do what I have to do. But then at a unit level and what I'm reporting up, that is constantly adjusting on a dynamic basis as new data is coming in. Have I understood that correctly?
Yes, you have understood it correctly. That's exactly what it is, right? This notion of forecasting and budgeting has been around a long time because a tool like Hotel IQ was never available to automate that process through the power of predictions, right? And again, you always need to take a look at the purpose, and the purpose is to give guidance. Mm-hmm. The purpose is for planning. Then if you have a facility, a tool that actually gives you a hell of a lot more accurate and dynamically changing guidance, why not use that? Why use your budget or forecast that is just based on rudimentary analyses and static data, right?
So back to your analogy of Google and my journey.
Yes.
And if I've understood this correctly, and if I get it wrong, jump in and correct me. I was doing it an old way, then if I was traveling into London, I would look at it and say, I traveled into London last February. It took me an hour and 30 minutes. There's a little less traffic on the road because of the time. So I'll say I'll do it a little bit less.
Yeah.
Whereas what you're saying is if I looked at it now and did a prediction for that day, because on Google Maps, you can pick the day you're going and the time when you're expecting to leave. Correct. It has used all of the information that is going on and as much as it can gain from other sources to determine what may be happening. It may already know about some roadworks that are occurring that is slowing up traffic. That wasn't accidents. There last year. And so that is dynamically adjusting. And so now can give me a prediction to say, well, actually, you thought it was going to be slightly less, but it's going to be longer because here are all the other factors that weren't happening last time, but are happening now. Is that
correct? And that's what you just said is the recency of data. Remember, I said recency. So that's the recency of data. It's very, very critical. You know, since we were using analogies, I might as well continue. Google Maps, yes, you know, data is dynamically coming, and it's the recency of data, right? And your then ultimate guideline is changing constantly. Well, you stick with that example. You know, those of your audience who are old enough to remember this, but there's MapQuest, MapQuest.com. And before Google, we used to go into MapQuest.com and put our destination, and it would print out, and it would tell you how long the journey would be.
Right.
And you would print that out, literally, and get in your car and start driving. And perhaps when you print it out, it said 1 hour and 30 minutes. And you're in the middle, you're driving in 1 hour and 30 minutes already passed, and you're still not there. And do you know what I mean? That's how it is. You know, manual forecasting using Excel is like using MapQuest.com, printing out your directions.
Gotcha.
Versus Google, you know, it's very dynamic. And sometimes it even gives you different routes.
Yeah.
And that's what That's the kind of forecasting or predictions that we're advocating. Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it sounds, because we all love Google Maps, if we're using our analogies, as if it is a more enlightened way of forecasting. We have heard so much over the last couple of years about the utilization of data and machine learning and AI. So it seems daft not to lean into that if it can enable us to predict more accurately and therefore make better decisions. So where's the resistance apart from the obvious? Well, because we've always done it this way.
And that's it, really. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it is, Trevor. So you're going to an industry, which I'm part of, really. I come from the hotel industry, right? So I'm a hotelier for many years. And so you go to an industry that is very traditional, and you tell them, look, yes, I know we've been doing it this way for so long, since 1985. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Excel, right? Microsoft introduced Excel. But here's a new way, right? Here's how we need to do this. And let's just throw away the notion of forecast. Why do we forecast? Why do we budget? We know the reasons why. But then if there's something that gives us a hell of a lot more accurate guidance, then why stick with this static way of doing things? Less scientific way of doing things. But the resistance is, again, the comfort zone. So you're asking people to get away from their comfort zone, right? Mm-hmm. And you're saying, okay, well, just don't do this anymore, and follow this new and advanced way. It's just resistance to change. As human beings, we all have that, right? I mean, I'd like to think that I don't have it, but I know I do.
Everyone does, don't they?
Yeah. Everyone does that. You just get into the habit of doing things, and it's hard to change sometimes. But then if you just put all the preconceived notions away and open your mind to the ease of things. The current way of doing it is also very manual. It's time consuming.
But there is a sense of control, though, I think. I was having another conversation that we did for a video that went out the other week, looking at technology. And it was really interesting that somebody brought up a point that some of the resistance is they feel when they move to technology, and when they're allowing technology like algorithms to be making the decisions, we feel like we're handing over control. Because when I've got a spreadsheet and I've got a number and I'm applying a percentage to it, I feel like I'm in control of that end outcome to some degree.
Right. I do understand that argument. When if you have a machine actually make decisions for you. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it's not making decisions for you. It's actually giving you guidance. You make the decision based on that guidance.
So back to your Google Maps, you can decide what you want to do, but it's giving you an indication, a prediction.
It's giving you a prediction.
Yeah.
And it's giving you a prediction. And let me give you a metric. The accuracy of Hotelaki's predictions is plus or minus 1.8% for a 12-month time frame.
Wow.
That's an incredible high accuracy percentage point. That's plus or minus margin of error is very, very high. And you will not get there manually.
If you were forecasting to the market and your forecast was within 1.8% one way or the other, they'd think you're pretty solid.
Exactly. And so I totally understand the argument. I do. Letting a machine make decisions for you. You're not doing it. I don't necessarily believe in that, quite frankly. This comes up actually. I get this question quite often. I believe in the power of human brain. The machine itself is created by the human brain. So I believe in the power of human brain. I don't think that the machines should make the decision in certain areas. And I think the machines need to give guidance, especially when it comes to forecasting and budgeting. So that's what automating forecasting and budgeting means. It's actually looking at predictions.
Yeah.
That are science driven, that are data driven, and then you make the decisions accordingly as a human being. And I'll give you another example. You're a hotel general manager or owner, whatever that might be, and you're using, let's just say, Hotel IQ in Hotel IQ forecast management system. And within Hotel IQ's forecast management system, it's powered by predictions. It's giving you X amount of predictions for a certain day, but Hotel IQ doesn't know one thing that you do. You know, perhaps the street in front of your hotel will be closed between certain days, right?
Yeah.
And you believe that it's going to have a direct impact on your retail business, right? Hotel IQ doesn't know that. You have that fact. Hotel IQ does not necessarily communicate with the municipality to get that information.
Sure.
You know that, and based on your feeling as to what the impact is going to be, you would come into Hotel IQ and massage the number and say, okay, you know what, the street will be closed, it'll have an direct impact on our retail business by this much, and you have the ability to actually train the model within Hotel IQ and say, we expect this much of an impact. So that's what it is.
Very good. Yeah. I can see why when you see budgeting and forecasting still going on the way it always has done with an Excel spreadsheet, taking a number from last year and adding a percent, and particularly in, current climate where, the last 2 years has been all over the place. So what are you doing? Going back to 2019? And looking at your numbers then, I mean, it's just so many variables in there. So
that's right.
I can see why the need to, your argument for leaning into something that can give you a much more dynamic prediction that is continually evaluating the data available. Yeah.
The recency of data has never been this important before.
Yeah.
Because of the circumstances we're in, because of the fast-changing environment that we're in. So for that reason, you're right. I mean, what do you use as a baseline? 2019 or 2018?
Yeah.
Whatever you use, it's not going to be a good baseline. And there shouldn't be any baseline. It needs to be zero-based forecasting.
Yeah, no, I think that's a solid point that came out from it. Well, I think that's pretty much covered all the key points that we wanted to get across for this discussion. But I think what we'd also look to do is probably tie up a look in the future to see if we can come back on and actually have a look around the Hotel IQ solution, if there's ways that we can do that without obviously breaching confidentiality and bits and pieces, and actually see if there's something we can do to bring that to life a little bit. But we can explore that at a later date. Any final thoughts from your side on this? I think covered a load, and from my point of view, really, really interesting and thought provoking.
Yeah, not really. I think all I can say is throw away all the sacred cows. It's really important. People need to open up their minds. And they need to use the power of science. And I always say this, technology companies always present whatever they have as quote unquote the solution. And there are tons of technology companies that are out there. And they offer quote unquote solutions to the hotel industry. And yet none of them has ever worked a day in their lives in hotels. And to be able to solve this problem for the hotel industry, being a technologist is not enough. Mm-hmm. Being a data scientist is not enough. Being a hotelier alone is not enough. You need to have all three to do this right. This is not a matter of technology. Technology is an enabler. It's the single most important enabler, but it is that. It's an enabler. It is, again, it's the ability to know the trade, in this case, hotel business, and also know the science, in this case, applied economics, and marry them both. Mm-hmm. And that marriage can only be enabled by technology. So technology is not a solution. It's an enabler. The solution is the know-how of marrying the art of running hotels with science of running business. So I want to leave it with that.
Sounds like a perfect final comment. Wonderful, wonderful, and really appreciate you taking the time to join us. Really appreciate you sharing your knowledge and your insights. And thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Anytime, Trevor.
Take care.
You too.
Well, I hope that conversation was of interest, and thanks again to Apo for joining us. If you have any thoughts or views on this discussion, please feel free to reach out. We value your input, and we're happy to follow up with our guests. Also, if there are any topics that particularly interest you, or if there are any specific guests you would like to hear from, please do let us know. You can reach us via our social channels, or you can email us via insights@revenue-hub.com. That's insights@revenue-hub.com. And if you like what we're producing, please do subscribe through the podcast channel you're listening to. If you want to see the interview, you can find it on the Revenue Hub YouTube channel, and the link is in the podcast notes. And if you do watch it on YouTube, it would be great if you could give it a thumbs up or even subscribe to the channel, because it really helps us out. Anyway, until next time, thanks for listening.